This is Bird Note. If you are new to birding, you might assume that you need fancy binoculars or have to venture off to some exotic places to look for birds. Truth is, you don't even have to leave your home to enjoy birds. In fact, many folks do it right from home. That's usually how we first experience birds, by watching and learning the birds out the window every day. And you don't actually have to physically go anywhere to find birds. You can use a smartphone or computer to go birding. There are several websites where you can view live feeds of nests, like the Cornell Labs feed of a red-tailed hawk nest in Ithaca, New York, or the Hellgate Osprey nest at the University of Montana. You can even have your own bird feeder camera, thanks to at-home setups like BirdFi and BirdBuddy that allow people to watch the birds in their backyard. You can learn a lot about birds by observing their feeding habits and how they interact with other species. And then the next time someone complains that you're on your phone too much, you'll be able to tell them, "Hey, I'm enjoying nature." For Bird Note, I'm Jonice Franklin. Bird Note is grateful to all listeners that provide financial support for this show. You can join them at birdnote.org.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. The support from our awesome community helps keeping the station diverse and independent. Thank you.
From Hamilton, Ontario, this is the Green Planet Monitor, your weekly report on Earth systems, human development, justice, and science. Today, diving back into the Earth Chronicles vault, First Nations voices from across Canada, the Sweetgrass Road. Before diving in, a quick appeal. If you appreciate what you're hearing, subscribe to the Green Planet Monitor at greenplanetmonitor.net. This is the Green Planet Monitor. I'm Dave Kattenberg. Between the winter of 1992 and the spring of 1994, backpack on my back and a vintage analog Niagara 3 reel-to-reel tape recorder over my shoulder, I traveled across Canada twice. Back and forth, visiting places and interviewing people from Prince Edward Island to the west coast of Vancouver Island. Out of this audio recording adventure, 32-hour-length documentaries emerged, voice escapes, exploring planet Earth, global ecology, and sustainable human development. The Earth Chronicles, the series was called. Producing the Earth Chronicles was a task of epic proportions in a room at the Yellow Brick House on Strathcona Street South, here in Hamilton, doesn't exist anymore. Countless hours were spent listening back to all these voices on dozens and dozens of reels of quarter-inch tape, wax pencil and razor blade in hand, slicing, splicing, and assembling sequences, lengths of magnetic tape around my neck, over my shoulder and knees, piled up neatly across the floor in little piles of tape across town in the production studios of 93.3 CFMU-FM, McMaster University Radio. I pumped out 32 editions of the Earth Chronicles, all perfectly narrationless, voice escapes. Most everyone introduces themselves. Here's one of the Earth Chronicles series, featuring the voices of First Nations people from across Canada, the Sweetgrass Road.
When we're little children, we are taught to refer to the earth as our mother.
We were here to look over the earth and make sure she was being protected and looked after, and her daughters too.
Our duty as Native people are to be caretakers of this land.
We've always been taught that if we're to take something from nature, to return it something else, or even before we take something, to return something.
That's the only thing we don't teach that. Bones and the manure, that's the only thing we know. Otherwise, we eat everything. Like, we don't spoil anything. We eat all, and we use the hide for moccasins or jackets like that.
You know, the wisdom of our elders, like, it's uncanny sometimes. It's the way they can explain things, you know, the gift that they have.
Yes, there's a great store of wisdom and common sense of people who live on the land, and you should listen to it.
People. We are a nation. We have our own culture, our own language. We have a land that supports and sustains us. I know what that land means. It's a land of remembrance. It's a land of remembrance because, you know, I just got back a couple of weeks ago from my trapline. I have a 14-year-old son. When we landed there, I told him, I will tell you of stories that your grandpa told you. I will tell you what it means that the land is a land of memories. I will tell you that side of the mountain was where I killed my first moose. It will be forever remembered. This is where we buried one of Dad's uncles. We have burial grounds. This is where your migration routes of certain animals, your beaver lodges, your spawning grounds. And this is where our spring camp, your fall camp, your midwinter camp, to demonstrate to him that there's history here, that we have a strong culture that's tied to the land.
My name is Steve Lawson, and I'm situated on an island off the west coast of Vancouver Island on the west coast of Canada. That paraphrase of having dominion over the land and the creatures therein, in all Aboriginal cultures, that would be a misprint because they were given the responsibility of caring for the land and all the creatures therein. And I think that's the only real difference between the native and non-native cultures is that fact, that one point, that the native cultures will put forward the caring for the land and the non-native cultures as it relates to the biblical teachings and the teachings of their forefathers, that they are to have dominion over it.
But how can you own the sky? You know, how can you own the water? If you can't own them, how can you own land? You know, land, the way we looked at land, it was here, it was put here for our use to share, not to be fenced off and used just for private gain.
Say our Indian names out loud. See, I have a Christian name too, which is Matilda Knockwood, my maiden name. Matilda Snake is my married name. But at one time, we weren't allowed to say our Indian name because it was said that it was I guess our culture and our belief was bad, and we were witches and heathens, and I don't know. It was my family that gave me this name. And my family, my sister, Georgina said, you know, this is Mikchik, which is turtle. And everybody said, no, no, this is Mitdil, Matilda. You know, that's how you say Matilda in Indian. This is Mitdil. And everybody, she's saying, no, no, this is Mikchik. And so they all looked. This is how Mom told me. She said, they all looked and they said, yes, this is Mikchik. So from then on, I've had that name, Mikchik. But I've never had it smudged or sacredly smudged, eh? Until I was about 24. And at that time, I had met another old man who adopted me. He was an old Ojibwe man up in Geraldton. His name is Ambrose Meshaki Sr. And he adopted me as his granddaughter. He's since then passed away. But he gave me the name. He said, you deserve the name of Mshkwadezisk, which is Turtle Woman. This is known as Turtle Island, this whole North American continent. And why do they call it Turtle Island? That's what my mother said. She said, Matilda, she said, you know your name is Turtle. She said, and at one time I used to cry when anybody called me Turtle, eh? So I thought it was just a nickname. She said, no, that's your sacred Indian name. And she said, and you know, you may leave PEI today and end up in British Columbia, but you'll find all across this continent, everybody respects that name, Turtle. She said, that's a very highly respected name. Not very many people are honored to have that name. But she said, remember that. And I'm saying, like, why then? Why is it so popular right across the continent? And because it's no matter where you go, she said, you're going to find out that the turtle had a big role to play on this earth. And it's the turtles that live the longest of all the water creatures. You know, and they have a lot to say. I think they have a lot of things that they could tell us. My responsibility now, which was told to me and I keep being told over and over, is the water. Like, you know, because we live in the water and we must make sure that everything is looked after in the animal kingdom. The water kingdom and all the plant kingdom too that's in the water, eh? When I do ceremonies for the water, I remind people of where they're coming from. I remind people without water where they'd be. I say, you know, in the beginning, before you ever came to this earth, you were surrounded by water in the mother's womb. And that water protected you from any dangers outside. So we always look to water for that. Protection and sustenance and life. Without water, we'd be dead, like, because our body's made up of so much percentage of water. I keep forgetting how much percentage are we, 90% or whatever. And anyway, to me, that just telling people and reminding them that when you wake up in the morning, you wash your face, you're washing away all the iniquities, all the dirt and filth that got settled there overnight or whatever. You're always using water for purification. You're always using water for cooking, for to eat. You drink water just to lubricate your throat you know, without water, you can't cry, you can't even feel, you can't spit, you can't, all these things, your system needs all that water. So I just remind people about this because they're forgetting. They're forgetting how sacred water is. So you, even one time I remember my auntie, her name was Annie Abram, and she's not here anymore either. But you know, she used to say, you don't take the water, you know, that you just washed your face with in the basin and throw it outside. You just don't do it. You take it and you pour it very carefully. And you always pour it where you know it's going to recycle. Like it's going to be used for something else again. It was always got to be recycled. And we were not allowed to stand in front of the pump and just pump and pump the water, you know, and just let it dissolve. You know, you're going to use that water, you respect it. And that's why I told you, when you're coming across on this island, before you come across, because I'm not sure about this ice, if you put tobacco down before you come across and you tell the ice or the water, you know, that you respect it, you show it respect by putting that tobacco down. And you won't have any problems. If you respect it, it will respect you in return. And that's what's happening. Like, nobody's looking after the water now. Now we're having problems with it.
Kinds of birds still have their language. They have never been able to learn French yet. All the different birds, the robins and the bluebirds, and also the crows, they still crow today. They didn't adopt another language. We'd be wondering if the crow would be hopping around the morning and he would be sounding like a robin. And I guess maybe that's the way it is with the Creator. He often wonders when he made Native people how come they don't have their language anymore.
You have all those, stories about what the bear could do, what the wolf can do, and it had a lot of influence on the way Indian people used to live. The wolf was be respected, the bear was respected, and all the animals that, we see around us, we're respected by people. The fish, it was one of the laws in the communities, never to abuse these wild animals, because they are the creation of Mother Nature, and they should be respected.
Hello, my name is Maxine Caldwell. I'm assistant coordinator for the EAGLE Project, which the acronym stands for Effects on Aboriginals from the Great Lakes Environment. I've been to conferences where they talk about ecosystem health, and what they perceive as ecosystem is quite different from the way I perceive it. I perceive it as that we're just a small part, and we're at the same level as animals are, and that because... And sometimes I get the feeling that because a scientist thinks that they are more intelligent than an animal, and they aren't, from my point of view. And so you have to listen to what's, or you have to look at and listen to what's happening to the animals and plants.
Well, we feel that we're brothers and sisters to all other species. Like, you know, we call the bear our brother, the dog our brother, and everything is a brother and sister to us. Oh, I forgot to introduce myself. My name is John Joe Sark. I'm a member of the Mi'kmaq Nation, the Mi'kmaq Grand Council, the government of the Mi'kmaqs in Prince Edward Island. We did not create anything, so therefore we cannot destroy anything. So before we could kill a deer for our subsistence, we had to pray to the Holy Spirit, or the Great Spirit, telling him that we needed the deer to sustain ourselves, but that we would take his clothing and decorate it so that he would glorify the Great Spirit. And then we would take all the bones and other remains of the deer and tie them in a tree so that they wouldn't be desecrated by other animals. If you cut a tree down, you had to put tobacco, you had to make a ceremony and put tobacco in its place. Use everything that was valuable to you to give thanksgiving for things you use, like tobacco and sweetgrass, sage and cedar. They're all used to give thanks for things that you're going to use. So you had to have a ceremony, an elaborate ceremony for everything you did. Because the tree is living, we believe the tree has a spirit. You know, and everything is living, so when you destroy it, you can't destroy it without giving thanks to the Great Spirit, telling him you want to use it. Because we didn't create it. So we have no right to destroy it. Even the rocks, like, you know, when we pray to the Great Spirit, we say, that teach me the lessons hidden under every leaf and rock. We're looking for the lessons that he had put there for us to learn. So everything is on Mother Earth for a purpose. You know, and by destroying the environment, we're destroying our purpose for living. Because our living is to try to find out what the Great Spirit has in store for us to use, has in store for our, for the benefit of all creation. Like, you know, we can just talk about man, but man is probably the most destructive animal in the creation. But we have to protect the creation for the other animals too that are here. You know, at one time that was easy to do because we had a fellowship with the animals. You know, we knew the animals, and we knew the importance of the animals to the whole system. Like if you poison just a diatom in the river, like a fish will eat it, and then a bigger fish, and then you eat it and kill yourself. Like, we knew those things. Like, we didn't have PhDs in science and biology, you know, and but we knew what the purpose for everything in life was. And we followed the natural order of life.
This is Norm Fontaine, and, you know, I live in the north here in Thompson, Manitoba, and our culture is symbolic. There's sweet grass, there's trees, and the animals and the rocks, which teach us certain concepts or basic values of our culture. We don't need a Bible, we don't need a book to find the word. Our Bible is Mother Earth. It's the animals, the trees, the rocks, the lakes. That is our Bible, and it's alive. It's living. So I believe that it's how you look at things around you, your environment, and how you feel connected to things. And basically, it's a humbling experience to realize that we are part of everything. And why would you want to destroy those things that are part of you?
My name is David Suzuki. I'm a professor of zoology at the University of British Columbia. Other creatures are our kin. That is probably one of the most common notions. So that in British Columbia, I mean, it's classic. You go through all of the various nations in BC, and they have the fireweed clan, and they have the killer whale clan, and the raven clan, and the wolf clan, and the bear clan, and they have all of their clan system is built on the basis of their relationship with these other creatures, with plants and animals. And they refer to my brother the killer whale and my sister the raven, and they really mean it. And the interesting thing to us is that genetics, the DNA analyses show that they're absolutely right. By DNA comparisons, they are our relatives in our DNA and our evolutionary history. They speak very often, or again and again, of sacred places. Places where you would never think of coming and defiling it in any way, like cutting down the trees or cutting a road through. And often you find these sacred places, which relate to their myths, are very important biological areas. And again, I find it interesting that we're not talking about the need for sanctuaries, biological sanctuary. Well, to me, a sanctuary is just a sacred place. It's a place where humans can go in a worshipful or reverential way, but you would never think of going into a sanctuary and clear-cutting the forest or creating a dam. So again, interesting overlap between the Aboriginal perception and our ideas. The other very striking thing is their concept of time. We tend to think of time in a linear way, you know, time's arrow. And the minute you get an arrow, you have the idea of progress. You're going from a place to a better place. Whereas again and again, Aboriginal people speak of time as a circle. The interesting thing to me is when you think of time in circular terms, then it really changes your kind of priorities. I mean, what the hell's the hurry if we're only going to come back to the same place anyway? And we tend to think, God, we've got to do this because we want more and more progress. And I think the circularity of time changes your need to get anywhere.
The understanding of the cycle of life is that things that go around come around. And that's our whole culture is based on that, the four directions, which is kindness, honesty, sharing, caring, and faith. In other words, you have to practice that way of life. It's we call it the sweet grass road.
name is Ed Isaac from Wapool Island, Ontario, situated down between Sarnia and Windsor, Ontario, and the St. Clair River in Great Lakes, part of Great Lakes Potawatomi tribe, who've been living here for centuries. Nature's laws are our Creator's laws, God's laws. There are no higher laws on earth than nature's laws. Man makes up his own laws. Man can make up any law he desires. And Canada is notorious for tailor-making their laws. And when they make too many man's laws and forget about nature's laws, man can't control nature. With all their billions of dollars of weather equipment, they can't tell me when it's going to rain outside my door and how much rain I'm going to get and at what time. All they do is talk about it, talk about the weather, but yet they spend billions of dollars on it.
The laws of nature are something that I've got a basic understanding about. One of the first laws I was taught was, when you take something from nature, you replace it with something. You don't just take and take and take. Otherwise, at some point, it can't continue on that way. It'll come to an end. I'm not really a deeply religious person, but yet I recognize these laws that we are governed by and honor these laws. And we mentioned a little bit earlier about parenting, and that was probably one of the strongest influences on my life to begin to understand and recognize these laws, because I'm a parent. And some of these things that may come back on us could also come back on your children. And, you know, you don't, as a parent, I don't want that. I wouldn't want to see a child suffer, especially my child.
If you go into the woods in early spring and you know everything's starting to come back to life, you know that, eh? Spring is when the grandmother brings out her best light, and all the plants, they will face that light. That's where they will face. And you'll see a plant underneath the ground just shoot up. And it's a funny thing, you can sit there and you may miss it. But there's times when they dance, and there is no wind or nothing. These plants will be dancing. It show their appreciation for this life, eh? For this new life.
The Wendigo spirit is the one that brings us the cold, the one that's walking out and about during the winter months when we're inside seeking shelter, when we're more or less hiding from the elements. Wendigo is out walking around, out on his stroll, taking a break from his rest during the summer months, during the warmer months.
My name is Nabi Sashni. I'm from Shishajit, Labrador. The old people used what they call a shaking tent, but I never seen it. But there's a big tent, you know, that was made by the hunters for that old hunters. And normally that they make four sticks inside the tent with a caribou skin. And they say that when that hunter goes in, just before he goes in, right up to his neck, that thing just started to shake, you know. And then that he goes in, after he goes in, that you can hear different